You're listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, Peace Talk with Tundra Women's Coalition.
Hello, and welcome, and thank you for joining us today on the Peace Talk radio show. I am Annie Mae Lee, and I'll be your host. TWC's mission in the region is to provide safe, empowering services for families experiencing domestic or sexual violence. We seek to promote violence-free communities through culturally appropriate outreach programs and supportive services. The Peace Talk radio show is our opportunity to let the region know what work we are doing and answer questions if people have them. This is a call-in show, so if you have any questions, please feel free to call any of the numbers. So there's 543-5985, 543-2756, or 1-800-995-8954. If you or someone you know wants to learn more about TWC and the services we provide, please call any of TWC's number, which is the 24-hour crisis line at 543-3456, the toll-free number, which is 1-800-478-7799, and then our Bethel local business line at 907-543-3444. Again, this is a call-in show, so if you have any questions, please feel free to call in at any of these numbers, and these numbers are 543-5985, 543-2756, or 800-995-8954. Through the City of Bethel Cares money, which is passed through BCSF, TWC is offering individual and household assistance for residents of Bethel who have experienced financial difficulty because of COVID-19. You may qualify for assistance if you had to quarantine after exposure and couldn't work from home, or if you were furloughed from your workplace. If you think you qualify, please go to TWC's website. There you will see the documents that you need to receive the individual or household grant. TWC's website is www.tundrapeace.org. Fill out a CAP application online, or print one out and fax it to TWC. TWC's fax number is 907-543-3752. So, hello, I'm Annie Mae Lee, and I have here Carrie Achak. Do you want to say hi?
Hi, everybody. My name is Carrie Achak, and I work here at TWC as the Youth Services Coordinator.
So, we're going to be talking a little bit about accountability and domestic violence and kind of what that means in our communities. And before I actually speak about anything, we want to speak a little bit to our experience and say that all the statements or opinions or the things that we say on this web show or on Peace Talk are coming from a place of education and collaboration. We do not come from a place of judgment or the idea that we know what is best for everyone else's communities. So we know that accountability could look different because of the differences in the way law enforcement looks like there, what confidentiality looks like in the villages, how hard it is with things like weather restrictions to receive care, and what kind of things aren't being met when you have needs for a perpetrator of violence. So we know that Bethel can look different from many of the communities that may be hearing what we say, but we just feel that knowing a little bit about ways that we can hold perpetrators accountable for domestic violence is very, very important if you choose or if you really want to. So this is information we'd like to give out. Do you want me to go first? So hi, I'm Annie Mae Lee, and I actually came into this work at TWC from being in the shelter. I came into the shelter as a child, and that kind of brought me into the TWC children's program, which helped me a lot with my move to Bethel and a lot of resilience. That turned into involvement in the teen program. And that's where a lot of my drive to help people and to actively try to end violence came from. And that has always been very, very important to me and a big passion of mine, really being a help and a service to the community and to prevent a lot of the violence and the things that I've seen in my life from happening to the children I see out there. So that's a little bit about me before we start. And
I just recently started, this is Carrie, I just recently started working here at TWC for a little over a month now. And I'm still learning the process of TWC's organization. And with this topic that we're talking about, it's kind of something I feel very passionate about, being a survivor of domestic violence. So I do understand it from that aspect.
Thank you. And I also want to say that, you know, experiencing violence and my family having a history of domestic violence in the home, when we talk about accountability, we don't necessarily mean to say that, like, oh, what we need is for everyone to go out and hunt every perpetrator of domestic violence until they come over to the center of the town and admit everything they've done and things like that. We know that these people who perpetrate domestic violence have loved ones, have many good qualities as well as their abusive behaviors and actions. So I just want to put that out there right now that even though when we talk about things like accountability, it could sound like maybe an organization saying, like, oh, you're not doing enough, or how do I explain this? You're not doing enough, or because you're not doing enough because you don't care. We know that when it comes to domestic violence, and especially out here where we are so reliant on our relationship with each other and our community, we know that it could be very, very difficult to actually broach the subject and to, and because it looks so different from other places. So that's all I want to say before we actually get into the topic. And again, I'm just going to put the TWC local business line out there, 543-3444. And you can talk to Annie if you would like more information. So at first, when we talk about accountability for people who commit acts of domestic violence or who abuse their partners, you have to really talk about knowing what the dynamics are. We not always see instances of violence as clear as, you know, people, I mean, not as clear as people, but we don't see every instance is what I'm trying to say. And when we don't kind of see those types of instances, or we kind of have them spread out, sometimes it's easier to kind of stop and say, like, okay, well, it's not happening that much, or it's really hard to find something to do about those instances. But when you think about the actual dynamics and maybe recognizing the actual dynamics and what might come with it, it makes it easier to identify. So one of the biggest dynamics of domestic violence is power and control. And you'll see this by really how people behave around each other. Who is making a lot of the decisions? Who seems to have more power in the relationship, and or does the other person or the person who's being abused or possibly being abused seem like they feel safe? So do they look comfortable? Do they look relaxed? Do they look really stressed out? And, of course, there are times where things are very, very stressful, and there are times where things just in life are very, very stressful. But when you see something as a dynamic in a relationship or a constant in a relationship, then it might be a time to ask a question. Like, are you okay? How are things going? Do you feel safe? So you would see a significant lowering in a partner's self-esteem. And this could look like just constant put-downs, talk about maybe all of the issues that they find with their partner, rather than what a loving relationship should do, which is lift each other up and support each other. Do you see that their work or the things that they accomplished are being minimized or made to feel less important? Or maybe their position in the household, maybe if they're staying at home, that job is made to be less important. A lack of or a lowering of self-esteem is to make the abused partner, victimized partner, more dependent on the abusive partner. And so when you see the type of things like that, could be a possible denying of affection or any type of or any type of way that's specifically made to make the partner feel bad about themselves or what they're doing when it comes to actually doing things like gaining independence. That's really, really important because independence is not necessarily something that can be had when you have an issue with power and control. So then you would say maybe this person habitually displays domineering behavior, so putting their will above another person's. And that's really important in a relationship because relationships are about collaboration and compromise. So punishing a partner to keep a partner in line, and you'll see a lot of that type of entitlement, this, well, I have this right to do this, or I have the right to punish my partner. And this is not something that, you know, people usually say in those type of very, very blunt words. But when you have that type of dynamic where one partner is able to keep their partner in line through any type of verbal or physical punishments, shows that there might be just a very, very big power imbalance within the relationship. So you also see a lot of isolation with a partner. A partner is discouraged from doing more things that they love. Maybe it's visiting family and friends. It might be that they can't go places by themselves anymore. Or sometimes it gets to the point where we even see people come in and they're afraid to go to things like hospital appointments. Afraid to go to things like dental appointments because of the abuse from their partner that they'll get later. And that's because there's a chance for that partner to get away or to ask for help. So isolation can be very, very dangerous in this type of relationship. And that is especially true within the villages. And we I acknowledge that. Hopefully some of this information will help. So you'll also see a lot of minimization and blame. One, yes, by the abuser, but also possibly by the loved ones and people around them. And we'll get a little bit into that later. So we know a lot about the dynamics of domestic violence. And oftentimes we talk about how it's like how we can actually stand against it or that we should speak against it. But we don't talk about the dangers of it or possibly why it would be so hard to hold someone you love, a valued community member, or someone that you grew up with accountable for something like domestic violence. And, you know, people can say there's no reason for the silence, but in many ways, there is. There is a lot of reasons why it would be unsafe or just emotional reasons as to why people do not hold their loved ones accountable. And it could be that they do not want to admit that someone they love has perpetrated violence or that someone they love is willing to put themselves or their will so high above that to gain power from another person. They don't want to believe bad things about the people they love, and we don't want to believe bad things about the people that they love. So it might be really tempting when maybe we hear about violence or we hear them talk about violence and them minimizing violence for us to say, well, you know, all you did was hit them. You only did it once. It was only this time. Or things like, well, you know, you were drunk or they were drunk. Because we don't want to believe that the people we love are, and I only use this in this type of context, abusers. I don't use abusers necessarily as something to describe anyone because people are more than that. But in this way, I'm going to say we don't want to believe that the people we love are abusers and are abusing other people that we love and care for. It can also be really, really hard because we're not sure of our own physical safety or our safety in the community. Confidentiality is a big barrier here, and do you want to talk a little bit about that? Okay, so confidentiality is a big barrier here to safety and services. And so doing something like going up to someone who perpetrates violence in a moment of anger or anything like that may put you in danger. Or people don't feel that they can because maybe it's not their community. Or just because of the fact that confidentiality around the community is so hard, that everyone will know about it. So it is very, very hard to hold our community members and loved ones accountable, and there are many reasons for it. But it's something that is really, really important. And silence and denial and minimization is something that allows domestic violence to continue to grow and thrive in our communities because it doesn't a lot of times we don't really know how to hold someone accountable or the signs of accountability. So I think that when it comes to the first thing that people know about accountability is probably that you're just telling someone they're wrong for something. And if that was it, just telling them that they're wrong for something, then things like jail would never have people who reoffend. It is a longer process than that, and it takes a lot of time to really, really be accountable. So what accountability is being told you've done something wrong, but without making excuses, no minimizing their actions, and do not try to lighten the language to make them feel better. Now, of course, it's not helpful to go in very, very combative and go in and say, well, you did this and you did that and you're a terrible person and nothing about you is good and all these things. You don't go in like that. But you go from a point, trying to make someone realize. And sometimes when we go in from a point of either anger or just saying, well, don't do that, that's bad, or a place of dismissal, it can sometimes send just a really, really bad message and be very, very hard to digest as a message. So it's also admitting to yourself and your loved ones the things that you did wrong and that they were harmful. So this could be, for instance, me saying, well, you know, I heard about what happened between you and that person. And I know you're coming to me from trying, wanting support and, or maybe you just want to talk about it. But I'm saying that I'm very, very disappointed in the way that you handled that situation. And I know that you have the capacity, to handle that situation better. Now that, So just having that accountable to the loved ones around them. And really, domestic violence between two partners does not only affect the two partners. So when you really think about being held accountable, it's also the other things you have affected and being held accountable to them. So I'm going to kind of circle back a little bit to the minimization and blame. It's easy to kind of look at a situation and say, well, you know, they're not the ones who are being hit, or they're not the ones with the bruises or things like that. But there could be, and there's very, very common here where there's multi-generational homes. Multiple people are witnessing this violence, and just by witnessing it, you are a part or are a victim to that violence in a way, especially when it comes to children witnessing violence. That is very stressful, and it's very harmful. You don't know what are safe times and what are dangerous times in a place where you're supposed to feel safe. So when you really think about accountability, it's not just accountability to the partner. And again, those people around them are going to have to remember that we can't minimize and blame, because many of the things we're taught to say in times of distress, or when someone's feeling ashamed, or when someone's feeling down about something, is we try to make them feel better about it. But you don't want to make anybody feel better about domestic abuse. And when we minimize and kind of take away from the experience of the abuse, we're taking away some of the experiences that the victim of the abuse has. So not only is the minimization going to affect the perpetrator of violence and the way they view the violence, it's going to affect the person who was victimized. Because they will see, or at least they see, when people aren't, they see when people see, like, things like bruises and stuff, and they hear about things like when someone says, well, it's only this, or they hear people say it to them a lot. And this I heard a lot in legal, when I was a legal advocate, people saying, well, you know, they were drunk, or, you know, it's better than it used to be, when the abuse is really bad. So in these situations, it might not be best to sit there and try to make someone feel better. So there's also some parts to accountability. There's, yes, being accountable to your partner and your family member in the community. There's also how you hold yourselves accountable, kind of in your own mind. So I did something wrong. That, yes, is the first step. But then they also need to realize no one made them act the way that they did. And that's really, really important. And I like to say this is the easiest way to fight for someone, is when, you know, someone points out something that you did wrong and you say, well, you know what, you left the dirty towels on the floor. And then someone says, well, you know, you didn't do the dishes. Well, you didn't sweep. Things like that. This whole, I did something wrong, so I'm going to deflect and point it back at you. No one made them do it. Or they could do something like refer to their past traumas when it comes to the domestic violence that's happening then. And, of course, there is some truth to that. But when you don't accept responsibility for your actions and you defer it to something else, then that's just simply it. You're not accepting responsibility. There's recognizing it was possible to change their reaction to their partner or their behavior or their dynamics. But they admit or they acknowledge that they chose not to. And I'm not saying that, you know, people say, well, I'm not trying to get better, or, well, I really don't want to be mentally healthy. I'm not saying people do things like that. What I'm saying is that in that moment or in these moments, they knew that their behavior was wrong. And they knew that their behavior was wrong. And And instead of choosing in that moment, which would be, and I really think, a harder situation, which is, or a harder decision, which is to try to talk something out or try to find healthy coping mechanisms, they chose the easy way out, which is refer to something that you know or was lived. So admitting to trying to punish their partner, and that it's an act of entitlement, that they have no right to punish a partner, because your partner is meant to be a part of a partnership with equity and respect in this partnership. And having to punish or control a partner is not a part of that. And then they have to admit that what they did caused harm to more people than their partners. Let them acknowledge the harm they're causing to the community, the services that were needed to kind of de-escalate a situation, maybe even neighbors, just acknowledging that it's affecting more than just their house. So accountability with the family after the abuse also is that after abuse, they do not expect the family to act normal. And I've seen this a lot with legal advocacy, where someone tells them, well, why don't you love me? Why aren't you loving me? Why aren't you kissing me? Why aren't you hugging me? After abuse, to try to get them to be less angry or to remind them more of the affection, when really they're using it as a manipulation tactic, and just thinking about how harmful it would be after abuse to have someone tell you to kind of maintain that type of affection that you had before would be very difficult to hear. So they don't expect forgiveness or to continue the relationship when they're acknowledging all the harm they've done. And this one's really important. It's easy to say, I'm so sorry, I'm changing, I'm going to work hard to change this, when someone's making you do it, or when you have something to lose if you don't do it. But it's different, and it's holding yourself accountable when you don't expect forgiveness or to continue the relationship. You can still jump in whenever. So they should accept that when their relationship is over, that they shouldn't try to keep pursuing their partner. They shouldn't keep trying to follow their partner. They shouldn't keep trying to get in contact with them for reasons that they are not wanting to. Any type of unwanted contact should not be happening. It's really, really hard, and it may be against some of our instincts and some of the things that we're taught growing up, but accepting that a relationship is over is really, really important, because when one partner does not accept that, it can easily turn into abuse. So there's also that they accept that the support of any children that's between them, so for instance, paying child support or spousal support or anything like that, they accept that that is a responsibility, and it's something that's needed, and that's a responsibility they must keep. And then for accountability to the community, and this is a big one, they shouldn't expect anyone to protect their reputation. So they shouldn't be saying things like, oh, well, hide those bruises. Or they shouldn't be saying things like, well, could you not tell them why this is happening. And of course, if those situations, we shouldn't be out there like just advertising everybody's information. But when people go through great lengths to protect their reputation over protecting the emotional well-being of their partner or their family, then maybe they need more self-accountability. And if they do get criticism or bad looks or people telling them that they're disappointed, that they don't react in a violent or in a violent way. So how do we hold people accountable without doing things like calling law enforcement or without getting ourselves into danger? And we like to talk about Green Dot. And Green Dot is a system that was created for things like college campuses, and each green dot is someone willing to do something about a bad situation or an abusive situation or in a situation of sexual assault, which is that that we speak up or speak out or do something, even small things, to prevent interpersonal violence. So the green dot, they have three D's, and that's direct, delegate, and distract. So there's definitely situations where being direct can be very dangerous. If someone is very, very, very wound up, they have they look like they have a lot of anger in them, they have a lot of aggressiveness, maybe you're in a place where they have a lot of people around them that are willing to support them and you're alone. Or just in general, it could be, there's many reasons why it could be unsafe to be direct. But what being direct is, just look at them and say, I don't approve of what you're doing. So sorry, I went ahead of myself. Being direct could be, I don't want to hear any of that type of language in my house. So if two people are there and someone says, well, you better do this, I like to say, get nah. If you're going to have that language, that threatening language, you have to leave my apartment. And they'll ask, well, why? And I say, well, you say you better or else. That very much sounds like a threat. I do not accept or I do not tolerate threats in my house. It could be things like that. So delegate, find someone who can help. If you see someone being abused and you can't step in, call the police, call the troopers, if someone you love is in danger, maybe call someone to help. It's not always possible for us to insert ourselves in a situation. So we can get someone who is more qualified to to make the situation more safe and to make the area more safe again. And then distract. And we like to say with the kids when we go to the villages is, and this is always really cute, is when you have a bullying situation, you could go up to the bully and say, hey, let's go play basketball. And sometimes, you know, we hear people who they say, well, my husband went hunting, and then that's what happened. So really getting people or the perpetrator away from the house can be very helpful to the victim of violence in that situation. So, again, those are being direct. Delegate, which is going to find someone who's more qualified to handle the situation, or distract the perpetrator of violence. So when we talk about holding the perpetrator of violence accountable, we talked a tiny, tiny bit, well, I talked a tiny, tiny bit, about how that affects the person who is the victim of violence. And like I said, minimization, blame, and everything can really make the victim's experiences, one, seem less important when it comes to the violence coming to themselves. Two, enforces those things that they're abusive partner has said, which is lowering their self-esteem. And three, sends the message that no one is going to help or wants to help. So what can we do for people who are experiencing violence and maybe not be so direct with the perpetrator of violence is that we can surround them with services and support. You know, what this looks like is people drawing themselves away from their family and friends. Or maybe you have someone who is a part of a vulnerable population who gets victimized. And this could be people with cognitive delays. It could be people with heavy addictions, people who are experiencing homelessness, things like that. Where you have a vulnerable population or when you have someone who's isolating and stuff, surrounding them with support and services is one of the most comforting and effective things you can do in that moment. Maybe you could give them confidential resources or to do a safety plan with them. Ask them, all right, so if something happens, where are you going to go? Do you have money or clothes that you could just grab and take with you? Where is your birth certificate? Where is your insurance information? Where's your kid's social security information? Things like that. Safety plan and give them confidential resources so that way if something were to happen that they could find a way to get safe. And one of the biggest things I like to say is keep their whereabouts and information to yourself. It's heartbreaking the amount of times I've heard stories where someone says, well, this person told my husband they saw me. Or this person told my boyfriend they saw me at AC. Or things like that. Or they know where I live. That can be very, very dangerous. And if you have a situation where one partner leaves suddenly and the other person is looking for them, you might have a very dangerous domestic violence situation on your hand, and it's best to keep their whereabouts to yourself. So if you have any information about where they are, where they're staying, maybe if they're if you know that there's a lot of abuse and maybe they're not in the home and the person's looking for them, don't let them know that this person said here. And if you hear people talking about it, let them know why it's dangerous and ask them to stop. That is one thing that I like to say as well. Just keep their whereabouts and information to yourself. And if you hear people talking about them, that asks them to stop. And then, and this is when he comes to working directly with the victim of violence, there's also the fact that you need to constantly send the message that what happened to them is not their fault. And it doesn't take one time. It takes many times because their perpetrator of violence spent a long time without accountability for their actions, without accountability to their partner, without them saying it's my fault and instead saying things like it's your fault. So getting them, just letting them know it's their fault, not yours. Well, you're not at fault here. That not yours might set them on the idea where they can start saying, well, okay, it's not my fault. So we have wonderful, wonderful things about our area, and we have many, many challenges. And I feel that when you talk about accountability and confidentiality, that can be something that's very painful to talk about because it is such a struggle for services, for community members, for really everyone. And so I think that it's really important that I point out that we do have many, many wonderful strengths in this area. We see strong, connected families. We see a large connection to culture and connection to each other. Our communities are more connected than many communities out there because we rely on each other. And that's something that is very beautiful. When Bethel did their community needs assessment, and it wasn't just teens from Bethel, but it was just teens from the area, and they asked, do you have a safe, supportive adult who cares and cares for you and cherishes you? And the answer to most people was very, very highly in favor of, yes, we do. I think it was like 52%. It was just a bold, very, very nice yes. And the fact that 52% of our youth feel loved and supported by the adults around them is a very big accomplishment that I think needs to be acknowledged more, is that we do have some great services in our areas. We do have strong, wonderful men, wonderful providers, and wonderful mothers and things like that. Sorry. I didn't bring my water. So I just want to point that out before I get into the next thing, because we are doing many, many things right, and there are many reasons to love our area. But I do like to say this all the time, is that Maya Angelou says, do the best you can until you know better, and then when you know better, do better. And this is something that's very, very hard to do. It can be very, very difficult to hurt our loved ones because, of course, holding someone accountable isn't going to feel nice for them. It's going to hurt. And we don't want to hurt our loved ones. We don't want to make a situation for a victim of violence even worse. That is definitely a fear that comes up. So it's very scary. But hopefully, just by knowing that these little things can help, and how we know someone's being held accountable, or maybe even just help them along to becoming accountable, stopping the minimization and blame, is hopefully helps us to do the once you know better, do better. And I just want to say, I keep saying I just want to say, that saying that silence allows violence to continue does not mean blame for the abuse or blame for the toxic behaviors or actions in that relationship is strictly at the fault of the community or the people that see them. That would be unfair and very, very harmful thing to say. What we're saying is that if you find yourself in a situation where you could make it better and you don't know what information is out there, hopefully we helped you. And if you need any more information, please call TWC. So we're going to have Carrie come on, and she's going to talk a little bit about food relief with COVID in Bethel. So I'm going to give you the speech.
Thank you. So the food relief, the food security is through the BCSF, that's the Bethel Community Service Foundation, and also with the Lions Club. Usually every month, the third Saturday of every month, they do a food distribution. Right now, because of the rising numbers of COVID, we are doing home deliveries as much as possible. The numbers for people needing food is rising. I see an increase on that daily. And if you're in need of food or would like to see if you're eligible to be a food bank participant, I would strongly encourage you to send a message to cell phone number 545-5043, and when I do have a minute, I'll contact you and go over some of the application questions on that form. And I think that's pretty much where we're at on that.
All right. Thank you. And sorry, I kind of didn't transition that well. That is my bad. I just thought that maybe a little information on food relief, just in case people didn't know about what's happening in Bethel with the CARES money. sorry. So if you have any information about food relief or anything like that, where do you call?
The phone number again, 907-545-5043.
All right. So another about the COVID money, I'm going to go back into our announcements that we had earlier. So through the City of Bethel CARES money, which is passed through BCSF, TWC is offering individual and household assistance for residents of Bethel who've experienced financial difficulty because of COVID-19. You may qualify for assistance if you had to quarantine after exposure and couldn't work from home, or if you were furloughed from your workplace. If you think you qualify, please go to TWC's website. And the website is www.tundrapeace.org. To fill out an application online or print one out and fax it to TWC, TWC's fax number is 907-543-3752. And since we have a little time, I just want to talk a little bit about TWC's services. And this is just in case any of you are listening and kind of know a little bit about TWC, but you don't know a lot about what we offer. So TWC offers assistance through things like legal advocacy, and in that they help with civil legal remedies. So things like protective orders or getting someone connected to a lawyer for things like custody or divorce. We also have the SAR program, which is a sexual assault response team, and that's support and helping for the call list for people who've gone through sexual assault in the region. We have our children's program, which does groups and child care for kids. We have me, Amani Mae Lee, and Mike Bialy, and Carrie doing outreach and prevention. And we do have a number of presentations and information that we like to share on the community and to our agency partners, in case any of you are interested. Here at TWC, we do have a clinician for counseling, and we like to use this for confidential services, but if anyone needs connection or help with anything like paperwork or connection or just needs some any type of support, it could be just after you've experiencing violence and you need to talk, please feel free to call TWC. We also are able to do that. So we also have, and this is the biggest one, which is the shelter. And the shelter is for domestic violence and sexual assault. It is a domestic violence and sexual assault shelter, so we don't necessarily take things like just homelessness. So, of course, we have a lot more information about TWC. And if you want information about our programs, that was just very, very short and very brief, please call. You can call TWC's business line at 907-543-3444. And again, our other numbers, which are our crisis line, which, again, this is for if you're in a situation where you don't necessarily want to report, but you would like support or, support and our advocate. You can call 907-543-3456 for our crisis line. And then our toll-free number, which is 1-800-478-7799. This has been the Peace Talk Radio Show, and I'd like to thank you for tuning in. Again, I am Annie Mae Lee, and I'm the Outreach and Prevention Coordinator here. And if you have any information about TWC, the services we offer, or if you would like to know about the presentations and the information we offer, please call TWC. Thank you so much for having us, and we really enjoy our time, and we'll see you next week for our next Peace Talk Radio Show. Thank you, and have a nice day.
Thank you for listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m. right here on KYUK.